Hi everyone, welcome to Cloud Cover. Today I'm very excited to bring back someone you may have missed the last few episodes, yep. Nick Harris, finally back on the show.
Hi, good to be here.
Absolutely. And today we've got a special guest from Green Button, Dave Fellows. Dave, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, hi guys, great to be here. Dave Fellows, CTO at Green Button. So Nick was just down in Australia. I'm from a little country called New Zealand, not far from Australia.
I've heard of that one, actually.
Yeah, separate country, not the same.
It's not the same.
It's not the same.
Yeah, not the same. These criminals or something? I don't know.
Funny. Cool. That's a good one.
Yeah, so at Green Button, we've developed a product called Cloud Fabric, which is a platform for cloud enabling and managing compute-intensive applications in the cloud.
Okay.
And so what do I mean by compute-intensive applications? Well, I've got a bit of a diagram I can walk through to set some context. So these vertical markets here are pretty typical of having these compute-intensive apps, and some of them you could call traditional high-performance computing, where you know, things like genomic sequencing or seismic processing for oil and gas or financial services. You know, they're very heavy computational users.
I see a familiar one there, Pixar.
Yeah, so rendering movies, another good example. And so, you know, they're great workloads for taking advantage of massive scale in the cloud, which, you know, Windows Azure obviously is very adept at.
Yeah.
And so what you have at the bottom is, you know, a number of public clouds, and as we can see, Windows Azure is bigger and maybe better than the other ones that we've got listed there.
Thank you.
But also, you know, a number of private cloud stacks that customers are using, you know, particularly now as they start to roll them out into the enterprise. But there's really a gap between what's offered by the platforms and what the software vendors and enterprises have with what are often legacy desktop applications that they want to be able to, you know, enable and take advantage of the cloud, but they don't want to have to rewrite that whole application.
Right.
So what we've done is sort of targeted the computationally intensive part of those applications, and so we've got an SDK that wraps that part of the application and allows that application to scale to the cloud or burst to the cloud. So when the end users of these applications want to run these big jobs, they literally just press a button. And any guess at what color button that is?
Is it possibly green?
Oh man, you guys are sharp.
I'm blue-green colorblind or something like that.
Don't ask him to push the button.
Chris is all good. And so they push a button, and all of the complexities of managing the data and all of that sort of stuff is handled for them, and then they just get the results back into their application. So it could be a desktop app, it could be a web port, or it could even be a back-end system where there's no actual end-user interaction. And we have tools such as the Warp Drive product here, which we just announced, for managing complex and large data sets as well. So I can touch on that a bit later. And then we have our Cloud Fabric Management platform, which is deployed to each of these clouds and manages things like the scheduling of the jobs, the automatic provisioning of resources, you know, appropriate for those jobs as they come in. We have the ability to predict how long some applications will take to run, and then we can turn that around to be an offer to the end user around time versus cost. Actually, I'll just quickly show you an example of that. This is an example of a Green Button sitting inside Excel. So if you've got a heavy duty workbook that you want to be able to, you know, offload from your desktop because it's taking, you know, hours to run, then you can use this. And with the job prediction, we get the slider option where the end user can decide, you know, what's my urgency that I need to get this job back, and therefore what price point, you know, am I willing to pay as well. So it's a pretty powerful control over, you know, managing the cost so that this price is a cap, so it won't go beyond that price point. So great for users that, you know, have a sunk cost on their desktop, but as they start to move things into the cloud, it's sort of a bit of an open-ended checkbook, you know, and that can be a bit daunting for some customers.
So presumably so what we've got here is Excel, there's a spreadsheet, there's a lot of data, multiple sheets by the looks of things.
That's right, yeah.
And, you know, ultimately you really want to run some process across this to get an outcome.
Yeah, so in this case we've got a whole bunch of trades. This is a trade blot, and it's actually a workbook by an ISV who's a good partner of Microsoft's as well, Numerics in New York. And so each of these trades is repriced using a Monte Carlo simulation.
Right.
And, you know, it can be very expensive, and all the pricing fields are populated in the right here. And so by sending it off to the cloud, we can break this up into smaller chunks and run these across, you know, a number of different virtual machines in parallel, and then have the results seamlessly brought back into the spreadsheet. So, it's a good, you know, good typical scenario.
Okay, excellent.
Cool, so
the plugin looks somewhat easy as well. So how's that actually link up to the Excel? doc. So obviously something is installed, and it's installed and added into Excel.
Yeah, so so this is a separate plugin that you know, someone can install into Excel, and then it you know, if I click submit here, it's going to work out, you know, this plugin you could find in a number of different applications. In this case, it's going to determine what is the dependent data that's required to run this. And in the case of Excel, it's really just that one workbook.
Okay.
But in other scenarios, like in RenderMan, for example, with Pixar, you know, a typical scene might be 200,000 odd files that might be scattered around that that studio's network, network shares. And so the plugin will also be able to identify those assets or those files and make sure that they're all synchronized with the cloud.
Okay.
And this is where some of the tools like WarpDrive or Cloud Sync are used to manage those more complex data sets.
Okay.
You can do things like you know, integrate into relational databases as well to suck data out of there, which is sort of more of an edge case. But yeah, pretty cool stuff.
Cool.
So I don't want to focus too much on Excel, but what I wanted to do today is step through an example of enabling a new application using our SDK, and so we can see how easy it is to use the unlimited compute power that we have in Windows Azure.
Okay.
Cool. And so rather than use something too domain-specific, like a, you know, genomic sequencing algorithm, which, you know, people might be, well, what the heck?
Chris knows how to do that. He just
I was doing that when I was 3 years old. Yeah. That's crazy.
Out at the bar, drinking. He's always riding on the back of napkins. You know, don't know what he's working on.
Well, you know.
So I thought we'd do something pretty simple, and that's transcoding video files into another format.
Okay.
And so you could use Azure Media Services to do that, and you know, that would probably be the better choice. But it's a good example because it's an embarrassingly parallel workload. Each of these work items could be done and independently of the other ones.
Okay.
So it serves as a good example to illustrate how the tooling works.
Right.
So before we jump into the code, I just wanted to step through a diagram to illustrate some of the pieces of the puzzle that we're going to need to put in place and some of the terminology.
Great.
So this is the SDK. On the left-hand side, we have our application. And so let's pretend we have a fictitious web application where users are going to be uploading their cat videos or something.
Right.
And then us as the application developers, we want to be able to batch these up and have them transcoded. But, you know, this could be a desktop app, you know, like we saw with Excel or whatever. And so the general workflow is we upload some data, we submit the job, and then we get the results back. And there could be, you know, status checking in between.
Right.
And this all happens through our REST API. And so the sort of the three main components that we need to put into place as part of the SDK are this job splitter. And so let's say we've got submitted a job to process two videos.
Right.
And so the job says, hey, I want to process these two videos. They come to the job splitter. The job splitter algorithm is going to know how to break that job up into the parallelizable tasks. Okay, and so in this case, it's really simple. You know, one video for one task, one video for the other task. If we had 100 videos, we get 100 tasks.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a sort of pretty typical pattern for most of these, or all of these embarrassingly parallel workloads. It's sort of a clear delineation or breakup. And then the framework will manage a queuing of those tasks. And then the next piece is, you know, what's the actual application that is going to be doing the real work? And so for our example, we're going to use FFmpeg, which is an open source transcoding application, pretty flexible. And so that gets packaged up into a VHD file. And this isn't a full-blown virtual machine image. Yeah. It's just a virtual hard drive. Mm-hmm. It gets mounted to the virtual machine. Okay. So any other dependencies that are required by the actual app get included in that file. And then the last bit is the task processor, which is another interface or abstract class which is implemented. And that defines for a given task, so say video one, you know, how do I call off to this application with the appropriate command line arguments so I'm telling it to do the right work.
Right.
Okay? And hopefully this will come a bit clearer once we get into the code. So for FFmpeg, you just literally give it the input file and then an output file with a different extension, and it knows that it needs to do the transcoding. Mm. We're not going to worry about quality settings or anything like that. And then the green button framework will manage all the data flow within the system. So it knows that it needs to bring this video down to this compute instance before it can kick off the task processor. So and also the outputs it'll make sure go back up into the underlying storage, in this case blob storage. Any failures within the cloud are automatically recovered. Mm-hmm. And then we do very fine-grained billing down to the millisecond or metering, and that's fed into our billing and commercial engine, which allows for you know, the capturing of cost against different users and departments, and allows for governance controls to be set up as well. So a larger organization can do a chargeback across their different business units at the end of each billing cycle. So pretty rich stuff there. And then obviously the dynamic resource provisioning handles as well. Actually, right, before I go to Visual Studio, where we're going to do all the interesting bits, all of the stuff that I'm stepping through is available from our developer.greenbutton.com website, and I'm actually going to do a blog post which steps through the same workflow that we're going through here.
Excellent. If you can share the link, we'll put it down there.
Cool. Excellent. And so from here, we can get links to the Visual Studio extension, which is thus.
Excellent.
And we'll see how that works. And then there's code samples as well up on GitHub, which you know, a lot of what I'm showing you is up there.
So I saw that extension's in tools and in the extension gallery for VS. So people can actually find it directly within VS without having to come to this site.
Yeah, if you go there and search your green button, then you should better find that.
So it's tools, extensions, and updates for anyone that hasn't used that before. Maybe we can show them the entry point to getting it in VS as well.
So from
tools, extensions, and updates, and then online.
Oh,
you're teaching me that. Yep, that's good. And then search for it there.
Oh, let's put the type under pressure.
There we go.
There you go.
It's already installed.
Yep.
But that's you know, a great way to do it because you're going to get frequent updates as you rev your SDK as well.
That's the one. Yep.
Cool.
So with that installed, what we can do is just go new project, and conveniently right under the Windows Azure Cloud Service option is the ability to create one of these two types of applications. So in Browsonly Parallel, we mentioned that term before. It's sort of used in the high performance computing world. Yep. And as we discussed, it means every item can be worked independently from all the others. MPI is a framework message passing interface, and so more traditional high-performance computing workloads like oil and gas seismic processing and some of the bioinformatics stuff uses this framework where it basically distributes across multiple machines and treats them as a single coherent cache or memory system. So obviously that requires a very low latency network for those workloads to be able to scale, and what is very exciting is Microsoft just announced their high performance computing environment a couple of weeks ago, and so that's got InfiniBand around 2.5 microseconds latency, which is the first of its kind in the whole market. None of the other cloud providers are providing that capability, so that's really exciting because if you've got these more hardcore HPC apps, then Windows Azure is the platform to take those to.
Cool.
Absolutely.
But we'll stick to the Browsonly Parallel, which is very cloud-friendly sorts of workloads. And we're going to create a new project called Transcoding App.
Usually a lot of Nick's projects have the word embarrassing in them, but I don't think it really means the same.
slightly different meaning.
It's only the name, at least. My code isn't embarrassing, Chris.
Nick's embarrassing projects. We'll skip through this. I'll explain this in
So this is a custom wizard that your template's providing here.
Yeah, this is just the only step, but it's I'll explain it now. Yep. So the application name is going to refer to the VHD file that we're going to put FFmpeg into. Mm-hmm. And so when we submit a job with our job type, it's going to go, hey, you're for job type transcoding app, which is the application name transcoding app. And so it's going to know which VHD file to mount to that virtual machine so that you can do the real work. So normally there's a one-to-one relationship between these two, but there's a flexibility to have multiple different job types under the one umbrella of the application, just if we need different job splitter or task processor implementations. So we'll click through that. And so this is going to set everything up that we need. Let's pin this for a second. And so firstly, we've got We've got a reference to greenbutton.cloud, and so this has got all our base classes for the SDK and everything we need. And then the application definition file is where the application name and job type are specified, as well as pointers to the job splitter and task processor implementations. So if we click into the job splitter, get that out of the way. And so we get a default implementation just to sort of give us an idea of what we need to do. And there's this one method split. Right. So we get passed a job, and we're going to need to split that into the parallelizable tasks.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we'll just remove that and drag in our one I prepared earlier. And so as we described, we're going to get a bunch of video files, and then we want to basically create a task for each of these video files. So we iterate through, and we create one of these task specifiers for each file, and we set the required files to be the individual file that we're working with. Mm-hmm. So obviously there could be a whole number of raft of files that some workloads might need, and as I mentioned before, the framework's going to know to pull that file down to the virtual machine. And then there's the ability to specify these key value parameters for a job type. And so those parameters might be used in the job splitter to help the splitting algorithm, or they could be used in the task processor to basically drive the executable to build up the command line arguments.
Okay.
In this case, we're going to be passing through one parameter, which is the output type we want.
Right.
So we're going to be taking in MP4 videos, and we're going to be transcoding them to AVI. So this is basically going to say, hey, I want to transcode to AVI.
Okay.
So that's going to be used in the task processor. And then there's the ability to run a merge task to do any post-processing at the end of the job. So if it's a rendering application, for example, I might want to take all those individual frames and create a final video for it. So the client application or the user can download that final video and not have to deal with the individual frames.
Okay.
Or maybe I want to zip everything up and provide a single output. In this case, we're just interested in the individual outputs from the tasks. So we don't need any merge process. So we have the ability to just skip that.
Cool.
Making sense so far?
Yep. So this is returning an enumerable of tasks.
Correct.
Okay. So break all the files into individual tasks, and if you need to perform a merge at the end, you can hook into that.
Yeah.
As
if you don't specify this, then the framework will automatically create a merge task for you.
Okay.
So yeah, it's really your call.
Yep.
So we'll have a look at the task processor now. And so just a reminder, this is the piece of code that's going to be running on each individual virtual machine, and so it's going to be dealing with one task at a time. So it's the scope. And so we get passed a task in this run external task process method.
Right.
And again, we get a default implementation just to sort of show how things hang together. But we'll move that and sort of paste this in a bit at a time. And so the first thing we want to do is pull out that one file that's associated with the task.
Right.
So that's our input file. Cool. Get reference to that. Build up our path to the output file, and so we're basically grabbing the input file, and here's where we use this parameter that we mentioned before, so it's going to be the .avi or just .avi. Cool, so just creating that name.
Yep.
Next. So the next thing we need is, you know, what's the executable we're going to call? Mm-hmm. Now, because the VHD file is going to be dynamically mounted to our virtual machine by the green button middleware, we're not going to know what drive letter is until runtime, because each virtual machine can work on different types of applications, so maybe Z or Z. And so the executable path helper function attaches the drive letter and sets that up for us.
Okay.
Cool. And so then next thing we need is, you know, what are the arguments we're going to pass to that? So we're going to pass the input file and the output file to the arguments. Cool. And then we want to kick the thing off. And so we create one of these classes called an external process. So, you know, what's the command? What are the arguments? And this is another thing the framework does for us, is it creates a temporary storage or temporary location on the file system where all of our input data is going to be automatically downloaded to.
Mm-hmm.
So we can expect everything to already be there. And we want to pass this along so that any outputs that are created are also written to that same location, so that the framework knows where to find all the outputs when we tell it what we want to save.
Yep.
Yeah, and then we call run. And then lastly, we need to, you know, tell it what are the outputs that we actually want to keep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we create one of these return types, task process result. We can list any number of files. In this case, we're just going to save the output file. And we're going to specify the output as being the primary task output. So we have the ability to specify, you know, if it's a really long-running task, we have intermediary outputs, so the user can get some feedback if that makes sense for the application.
Mm-hmm.
We can return an explicit log file, also a preview. You know, in this case, it might be relevant to have a preview file. In other cases, like the Excel one, you know, there's not much to preview.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, you know, the flexibility is here. And through the API, obviously, you can say, okay, this task is completed. Give me the preview file, or give me the output file, or give me all of the available outputs. So, so that's how that's leveraged from a client application.
So really, from a code perspective, it's quite straightforward, yet doing some very powerful things.
Yeah, it's a sort of a, I mean, what we're creating here is really just glue to sort of help drive what the Green Button framework's doing. But it, you know, it's extremely flexible. You know, it's applied to all sorts of different scenarios, as you know mentioned earlier. And then, rather than an explicit log file, FFmpeg is just going to log to the standard output. Well, actually, in fact, it logs to standard error, which is a bit odd. So we're just going to set this to this other property. And so, you know, rather than an explicit log file, this process output is made available through the API as well as our mission control system, which I'll show. Cool. And so that's That's that. And I mentioned before the merge process, which we are not interested in. So again, we'll move that default implementation and we'll just put an exception in here, not supported. So it's not going to be called at all, so we don't care. Cool, so we'll check we build. We do, that's always good. Let's pin that back. And so now we've done an implementation, but you know, we don't really know whether it's going to work or not.
Right.
Well, I've got a good idea it's going to work, but I hope. but what we can do is run this test host, or essentially an emulator, which is a local environment, and prepare yourselves. This is going to look ghastly in this resolution. Oh, it's not quite fitting in, but unfortunately the key fields are at the top here.
Okay.
And so this gives us the ability to exercise the job splitter and task processor locally so that we can make sure everything's working, and it'll give us warnings if things aren't set up correctly. So.
Okay.
So if we just
very important to have before you sort of start kicking off huge jobs.
Exactly, it's you know, it's a convenience thing. It saves you time rather than having to deploy to the cloud, as well as cost.
Yep.
So we'll grab a video. Let's grab one of these smaller ones. We can just drag that in there and say, hey, let's just do one video rather than a whole bunch. And then the VHD file is here. So normally this would be the full VHD. When I say full, I mean a real VHD file that we've created. But there's also another convenience thing where, you know, it's very cumbersome to have to create a new VHD file every time. And so I can just drag in the folder to a path and it'll just treat that as a VHD file. So we've got a FFmpeg sitting in the root of this this folder, so it's just going to treat that as a VHD.
Excellent. So realistically, you know, it does have the VHD in there, but you could have deleted that and dragged the folder in.
That's exactly right.
And that's what's going to turn up in the root of the VHD.
That might be a bit confusing otherwise, So we could have dragged the VHD in, or just a path to where the executable is.
Very cool.
So we'll click off run, and we can actually open this up into a different window, which is fortunate. And so normally it would verify that the VHD name matches the application name.
Okay.
Otherwise it's not going to be able to find a VHD. Yep. Mm-hmm. In this case, we're using a folder, so it doesn't need to. We can see we're processing task one. We've created a local storage path here, so we could, you know, navigate there and see our file that's been copied down.
Yep.
Then we're kicking off the process with the arguments, and we can see it's giving us a warning saying, hey, you're not returning a log file. It might be useful for your users. So we can ignore that. And then the merge task has been skipped.
Cool.
And so I think I can probably go like this. And what we also get down here is the output of FFmpeg, so we can see if there are any issues.
Yep. So that's the output of the task that you're running in the background.
That's correct. Yeah. So whatever external application is, and we can see the outputs here. We can click on that. And
here's the situation.
Cool.
And you know, we can open the folder and see, you know, here's our input file and here's the output file.
Excellent. Very powerful emulator feature.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. Pretty cool.
Okay, so what's next then?
What's next? Good question. Yeah. Glad you asked. So we'll put this into release mode because we're ready to roll. And so there's a couple of other options here. We can actually tell Visual Studio to use that emulator for debugging purposes.
Okay.
So we can actually put breakpoints in here and step through things, which I can tell you can be very useful.
Yep.
But what we're going to do is package and deploy this. And so let me just shrink this up. Secret storage credentials.
Okay.
And so I've already deployed the virtual hard disk file, so I won't bother doing that again. But if we needed to do that the first time or change it, then do that.
Okay.
And then if we click, that was quick. So it's
pretty
up,
fast.
Yeah. It's blob storage for you. Yeah. And so this has uploaded the compiled DLL into a storage container.
Yeah.
And our framework knows the web services and any VMs that are running are going to pick that up dynamically.
Yep.
And so now with that deployed, we can start submitting jobs for that particular job type. So it's a really cool dynamic way to deploy stuff and instantly start using it.
Okay, so we've got this the transcoding app or the piece that's going to split the job.
Yep.
This is good. So if you could just, you know, point out the bits that we've done so far.
So we're focused fully on the back end at this stage rather than the client side. And so we've done the job splitter to break it up. We've done the task processor to define the command line arguments.
Yep.
And we've already got the VHD file uploaded with FFmpeg.
So how's the compute instance actually picking up those DLLs we pushed up, I guess?
Yeah, so between tasks, it'll monitor for any new DLLs that have been deployed, any new applications,
right,
and load them up, and similarly the web services as well will pull that in.
So I guess there's some kind of green button service that knows about the storage account where you've just pushed
the assemblies to. The Green Button Cloud Fabric platform it can be deployed any number of times, and so we've got a specific deployment that we're using here, and that deployment is locked to a single storage account.
Okay.
And so it's using that for this sort of stuff, but also creating job containers when jobs come in. There's a container for each user's assets or files, so when we upload data, they go into dave@greenbutton.com container.
Okay.
And so I can have stuff cached there, and so when I run multiple jobs, I don't have to upload any. I have to upload the changes to stuff, so it's a lot of asset file management. Cool.
Yep.
And so we've got a number of compute instances already running, ready to pick up our stuff, and then our cloud resource controller that's sitting there monitoring stuff will start any new instances up if it needs to. It basically looks at the jobs as they come in and says, hey, what are your requirements? CPU, memory, I/O, how many cores, and has a look at what we've already got and what active jobs, what's available, and then we'll provision if it needs to. Okay.
Excellent.
Yeah. Cool. All right. So next thing is the client side, and we won't spend a lot of time in here. And actually, I'll point you to our the API reference. And so, this is the REST API, and these are the operations: submit job, get logs, cancel job, etc. There's ability to deal with tasks and files, so uploading files. So all of that's there, and the sample code that I'm using on the client side is up in GitHub as well.
Okay, so that REST API is basically available, but you've got a nice .NET SDK here.
Yeah, so we've got some libraries in .NET, Python, we've got some Java, as well as the libraries, some UI elements as well. Yep. So when we work with customers, we give them whatever's appropriate for their application, whether it's some C++ stuff or some Java UI elements, so that they can do that integration really easily.
Cool.
And so our console program is just going to send a bunch of videos through. Oh, there's some cloud cover ones. Cool.
There you go.
Good videos there.
Yeah, that's right. And then just RAM in and out the output type.
Yep.
And so we call into this execute workload. And so firstly, this is going to check of the files that we're loading up, what already exists, have there been any changes, do I need to actually upload anything? In this case, we're going to avoid that. And then we call submit job. Let's click into this. And so here, we've got one of these, just a helper class to set up the parameters we need to pass off to the API. And so here's our job type that we set up before.
And that maps to the assembly name that you uploaded.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. So it knows which job splitter and which task processor. It's also used for authorization. So you want to be able to define what users can actually run jobs for this job type, and also billing. So if you want to have your users actually pay to use the end service, then we meter everything, and you can get reports about who's used what and provide that billing model as well.
Okay.
And then there's the required files, instance counts. We've got five files. So we'll specify five instances. Yep. And there's this parameter that we need to pass in as well. It's going to be used by the task processor.
Okay.
Cool.
Yep.
Making some sense. Excellent. So we'll run that up. So we can see it's already up to date.
Yep.
So we don't have to upload anything, because that would be a little time consuming for our viewers.
Yep.
And so let's, with that running, yep. So we'll go to mission control, and so we can see I have to increase the resolution.
Yeah, zoom in a little. Yeah, there we go.
Yep. So our new job has already appeared here, and so mission control will aggregate stuff from all of the different deployments we have across private, public clouds, all over the place. So people have got a single pane of glass where they can do diagnostics and management information, and as I'll show you shortly, also managing the governance and billing and all that sort of stuff.
Great.
Cool. So if we go into this job and have a look, so we can see the individual tasks that we've created, and we can see the virtual machines that they're running on. And so if one of them's already completed, we can see performance information about CPU, etc. This looks like a single threaded application, FFmpeg. So you can see we're running on two cores, but it's only hidden 50%. But it's cool. So we might want to run that on single cores if you ran it again.
Okay.
Cool, and so we've got one completed already, and actually if we flip back to the console app, we can see we've downloaded that output for that completed file. So we can, if we've got a really big job, we can just start pulling down the results as it processes, which particularly for rendering jobs where you may have 10,000 frames, you don't have to wait for the end of that and then suck 50 gigabytes of data down. You want to be able to amortize that over the length of the job.
So where would in something that scale, where would the merge process sort of happen, like in a rendering job?
Yeah, so a lot of the more less commercial type of rendering applications, the users might be interested in that post-processing video creation. But in the major products like MentalRay or RenderMan, they typically take the frames and put them into compositing tools and do post-processing on them and refining the lighting and stuff. So I'm not really interested in a final output. They just want to get the individual task outputs. But it really depends on the particular use case as to what makes sense.
Right.
But obviously that's a good option if you can just deal with the task outputs, because you can process them as you go. Cool, so that's the job. Actually, we'll click on one of these, and what we can do is get the task log from, or the processor log from that process that's run. And so, if there are any issues, we can get the log from, in this case, FFmpeg, and if it was a rendering thing, there might be a warning about a missing texture or something like that. So, at least we get the same level of information, with it running in the cloud as we would if we had it running on-premise.
Yep. Excellent. Very useful. Logs are always handy for debugging issues.
Yeah. And similarly, there's a sort of an overall job processing log, which sort of helps us see, the workflow or, what data's been downloaded. If there are any exceptions at the job level, by the framework, and maybe a file was missing, then this log will show that, so we can see the submission and then the individual tasks, downloading the assets and kicking off the process, et cetera, and uploading outputs. So, again, all the info there that you should need. And you can cancel a job, you can edit the job to change the number of processes or instances that it's running against if you need it to run faster.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Or if there are any failed tasks for whatever reason, you can. Our framework will retry a number of times.
Okay.
But you can also do an explicit reprocessing thing.
Cool.
Cool. All right. So I mentioned sort of the billing and governance stuff. So let's change the zoom a bit here. The detail isn't too important. But so this reporting we initially developed for the ISVs that we're working with. So because of the way we host their application, it's quite sort of novel, because we're rather than, let me try and explain this better. So if I was a user of RenderMan and I wanted to run up, say, 1,000 processes in a cloud, I would have to turn up with 1,000 annual licenses to run on those machines, which if I just want to use them for a small amount of time, is not really going to fly.
Right.
And so we've got partnerships and deals with a lot of ISVs to pull a bunch of licenses on behalf of all their end users and basically meter them down to the millisecond. Oh. And so there's a core hour price, which covers the compute time, the storage costs, and importantly, the license fee.
Right.
So the ISVs can, or people who are enabling their apps with our SDK, can go in here and see what users have signed up, what jobs have been run, and therefore what revenue has potentially been generated. And we can drill down. I've just filtered this on admin so I don't expose any sensitive customer information.
Yep.
But if I was logged in as, say, Pixar or for our transcoding application, then I'd just see the information for our transcoding.
Okay.
Cool. And so there's tabular views as well, which allow you to drill into jobs and users and that sort of thing.
Okay.
Cool. And then we can also see for a particular user, if I click into me, what jobs I've run, how many jobs, how many core hours of spending, and that sort of thing. So it's a good exposure there to usage. We have ability to show what deployments we have. We won't focus on this too much.
No, interesting question though. There are other vendors out there. Mm. When you are building, a solution that needs to span multiple clouds.
Yeah.
What kind of, where you've got these different options, you've got Azure and vCloud and others there.
Yeah.
Is the end customer able to choose a specific vendor to deploy or have their processing done on, or is it spanned across multiple?
Yeah, well, one thing I probably should have explained up front is we've sort of got two licensing or deployment models. One, where we're working with the software vendors and we essentially manage the service on their behalf, so everything lives in our green button deployed accounts across different cloud providers, and most of our stuff we run in Windows Azure, because Microsoft have been really supportive in getting yep. you know, helping us get those applications onboarded. Mm-hmm. The other scenario is with enterprises where, you know, they might have their private clouds using whatever stack, and yep. then they want to use one or more public clouds. Mm. And so they'll relicense our platform to yep. manage those applications and workloads across their private cloud and be able to burst seamlessly out to the public yep. cloud when they need extra capacity, which okay. is really powerful because it means they don't have to over-provision their internal resource mm-hmm. And just, you know, supplement it with external resource when they mm-hmm. need to. And importantly, they get the governance and cost controls sitting mm-hmm. over the top of everything. You know, one of our customers uses three different private cloud stacks and three or four different public clouds. And, mm. you know, trying to work out who's doing what across, you know, the 20 different Microsoft yep. Azure accounts and mm-hmm. Amazon accounts and everything is, you know, is unwieldy.
Mm. Okay.
You know, stealth IT is what it's commonly referred to, where, you know, I think 80% of cloud usage in the enterprise is stealth IT, where people right. are just using the credit card to go and spin up virtual machines and then say, no, look, it's books from Amazon, not virtual machines. So that side of it's pretty key. And okay. so we're still building yep. out some of the stuff in our new mission control system, our yep. old mission control system. We can drill into these data centers and deployments mm. and see exactly what's running there, okay. see heat maps and all that yep. sort of stuff, which is
so a nice roll up of your usage. So
direct
definitely. Visibility into what's going on.
Yeah, and actually if I flick over to our old mission control system,
yep.
shield your eyes. yeah, and so, you know, we can see what are the running costs at any yep. point in time, the hourly cost, projected monthly cost, mm-hmm. and see exactly where those costs are going to be attributed, okay. what applications, yep. et cetera. So mm. really powerful for a CIO or CFO okay. who wants to get that overview.
Yep.
We also have the ability to manage Hadoop clusters and provision Hadoop clusters through okay. our API. And so if you're using Hadoop on-premise and want to scale out to you know, the cloud, you know, HD Insight is a superb offering, but some customers, if they're already using Hadoop, will require a particular distribution or version. Right. And so we have a bit more flexibility about how they do that. So, you know, again, sort of good insight into what's going on there. And then I mentioned governance quite a few times. And so, you know, for enterprises managing these costs, and even in the ISV scenario, they want to be able to, A, control who can run applications, you know, different organizations and different users, but also, you know, what are the spending limits and been able to do things like chargeback. And so, again, there's in our old mission control system still, the ability to set up the organizational hierarchy.
Yep.
And so we have a test company here, we have a couple of departments, we've got some users at the top level.
Okay.
And then, you know, in this department we've got an R&D project. And so with this set up, and, you know, we can sync with an Active Directory, you can define spending limits at each of these different entities.
Okay.
And then at the end of each billing period, that organization can do the chargeback across all right. of the different groups to say, hey, great. You know, coughed yep. up. R&D department, yep. you guys are spending too much money.
Yeah, well, I do have one question about the licensing model. So you mentioned mm-hmm. there's two different models.
Yeah.
Now, in the situation, the model where you know, everything's done through Green Button, mm-hmm. Green Button itself controls all the instances that are actually running the jobs,
that's
right?
That's right, yeah,
Whereas the other model where it's kind of like I'm licensing the Green Button system, so to speak,
yep.
it's my own subscriptions, my own instances, just yeah. kind of managed by Green Button.
Exactly, yeah. In that scenario, if you're an enterprise, we license in the product, you know, the product is going to manage the environment for you, but it's running in your own subscriptions, you know, using your enterprise agreement if you're, you know, using Azure.
Okay.
For a security point of view, that's particularly relevant because some customers don't want to be running their stuff in a multi-tenant
sure.
environment. I mean, we do have options in our hosted one where when you submit a job, you can say, hey, I want this to run on dedicated instances, which mean you might pay a little bit more, but at least they're not sharing instances across different users.
Mm-hmm.
But for some customers, they want to have their own storage account and their own environments.
Yeah.
And so,
great.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. We did just announce this new product called Warp Drive. And so this is for accelerating transfer of files and you know, typically very large data sets up into the cloud.
Yep.
And so we initially built this capability for Green Button users, so, you know, handle large jobs. And then we built in this capability using Grid FTP technology, if people are familiar with that, to accelerate the transfer over UDP, and so really, really fast over wide yeah. area networks. And so we saw the opportunity to have it as a standalone product that people could yeah. use to get their data up into Azure.
Hmm.
And we did some benchmarks against Aspera, which is a very widely used product in the market. We're just acquired by IBM, actually.
Hmm.
Some news. And so Aspera have got some, I should, you know, put a caveat here, Aspera have got some limitations due to the way that they deploy out of the Azure store. So they're only deploying to a single server node,
right.
And so that limits the bandwidth into that node, whereas we stripe across a number of different servers and we can scale that up. And so you can see there are some pretty hefty megabyte numbers that we're getting for sustained throughput. So and compared to TCP, this is using Cerebrata, which developers out there may be familiar with some of their tooling. And so this was tuned to get the maximum throughput through Cerebrata. And so this sort of shows you TCP versus what you can achieve with UDP. And it becomes even more, the difference becomes even more expensive once you start getting further away. This is from west to west. From east coast, this was down around 5 megabytes a second.
Okay.
So that's going to be launching in the Azure store soon, probably around mid-March.
Okay,
but
great.
If anyone wants to beta test it or use it in the meantime, then let us know.
What's the appropriate contact detail to reach out to you?
I think I might have a slide on some.
There you go.
Perfect.
Yeah, so feel free to email me personally at david@greenbutton.com. But otherwise, if you go to greenbutton.com, you can find information on Warp Drive as well as obviously the Cloud Fabric stuff that I showed you. And then there'll be links.
Okay.
To the developer resources that I covered off as well.
I love your blog URL. I think we might have to buy that from him.
True. Yeah.
It was very, very sort of extensive overview. I think for the most part, you said this was a simple media example, but there are other applications to this technology.
Definitely made that clear. Yeah. Particularly in the embarrassing parallel scenario. And if it's a desktop app, a web app, if you're building a new SaaS app on Windows Azure. And a component of that can take advantage of doing some scale-out computing, then it's a great fit. I think also with the billing and commercial engine, even if you're not necessarily doing big scale-out, I think a lot of the capabilities here around managing users and costs and stuff could be a great boost to getting a lot of your SaaS application out into market and launched.
Excellent.
Great.
Cool. Well, thanks, guys.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, pleasure.
Yeah, good to have a fellow countryman here.
Close.
Next week, maybe we'll try to have somebody with some more hair, but no promises.
I don't know. I think it's a good consistent look here.
It does look good.
Okay. Yeah. So we'll put all these links as well. So Dave's Twitter alias there and greenbutton.com.
Yeah, and I'll try and finish that blog post as well, which steps through the what we just showed here as well, so people can follow through and contact us if you have any questions and want to know more.
Okay, excellent.
Okay. Great.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks. Make sure to follow us on the Cloud Cover Show, and thanks for watching, everyone.
Thank you.